From Grantham to Latrobe, Bedford to Balakinwood, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf has been reelected to a second term. What policy goals will he pursue, and will they set up a clash with the Republican-controlled General Assembly? David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion by Matt Briette from the Commonwealth Partners and Gordon Denlinger of the National Federation of Independent Business. And Keystone State voters reelected a Democrat governor and kept in place a Republican legislative majority. Does that mean nothing has changed? Not exactly. I'll explain why on my town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Despite promising hundreds of millions of dollars in undisclosed incentives, both Pittsburgh and Philadelphia lost out in their bids to become the second Amazon headquarters city. Published reports revealed that the retailing giant has selected Northern Virginia and New York City as the sites for its new East Coast headquarters operations. The failure of Pennsylvania cities to win the jobs and economic benefits of the new headquarters is unsurprising in that the Keystone State's business climate always ends up at the bottom of national competitiveness studies. Although they won't be home to so-called HQ2, the controversy will continue for both Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, as they have refused to make public their incentive packages, which would have been financed with taxpayer dollars. Lawsuits over that lack of transparency continue. Returning and newly elected lawmakers converged on the state capitol this past week to elect leadership for the 2019-2020 session of the General Assembly. In the State House, Representative Mike Terzai was again selected as Speaker, but the retirement of Majority Leader Dave Reed opened the door for State Representative Brian Cutler of Lancaster County to ascend to the chamber's second most powerful position. The shift is notable in that Reed was often seen as too willing to compromise with Democrat Governor Tom Wolf. Cutler is more likely to fight for conservative policies. Republicans lost a net of 11 seats in the November general elections, but still hold 109-93 majority to maintain control of the chamber. Former President George W. Bush and his wife Laura were in the Keystone State this past week to accept the Liberty Medal at the National Constitution Center. The Bushes were honored for their charitable work, helping wounded veterans and providing them with career training. The award comes with a $100,000 cash prize, which the Bushes said they will donate to the George W. Bush Institute's Military Service Initiative. And results of the November general election haven't even been certified yet, but candidates are already emerging for the 2019 municipal elections. Notably, State Senator Anthony Williams is floating a trial balloon, saying he is, quote, seriously considering challenging Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney in the May primary election. Williams said the rhetoric of Kenney's successful 2015 campaign has not been followed up with performance and that city government is underperforming. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania voters once again have opted for divided government, handing Governor Tom Wolf a second term and keeping Republicans in control of both houses of the General Assembly. So given his party is in a legislative minority, what policy goals are Governor Tom Wolf likely to propose in the coming year? David Taylor is here to host a Capitol Watch discussion. He is joined by Matt Briette and Gordon Denlinger. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my pal Matt Briette, President of Commonwealth Partners, the Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you, David.
And an extra special welcome today to our good friend Gordon Denlinger, the newly minted Executive State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Gordon, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
Well, it's a heck of a time to come back to Sin City, Harrisburg, PA, to see the circus that's come to town. Gordon, of course, had a ringside seat as a former member of the General Assembly, and so we're sort of sifting through the wreckage of election 2018. And I guess I'll just throw it to you fellas. Matt, we'll start with you. What's your takeaway?
Well, my takeaway is that Pennsylvania most definitely experienced a blue wave when it comes to voter turnout. We saw 1.4 million more voters than the previous midterm, and actually about 800,000 more than the previous high water mark back in 2006. I also would say that the blue wave came in the form of green cash. When I think all is said and done, we will see an enormous amount of money being spent on these elections, an enormous amount coming from outside of Pennsylvania. But the good news is that despite this blue wave, I think we withstood a lot of the battering that this wave took. You know, the Democrats only took, you know, three congressional seats where they were hoping for six. They did not flip either the House or the Senate at the state level. And in fact, they kind of took out some of their best votes in the Republican caucus. So they kind of washed away some of their Southeast friends, friends that vote with the trial lawyers or with the unions. So all in all, while you have, you know, states like California that they have a trifecta, not only where Democrats control House, Senate, governor, they have super majorities. I mean, Republicans can't stop anything in California. You know, bigger states like New York, same thing, took over. They have a trifecta there, House, Senate, governor. So when you think of Pennsylvania, yeah, it wasn't all that good, but I'll tell you what, it could have been a heck of a lot worse. I'm looking at the silver linings that we can take away from
it. Fair enough. Gordon, what's your big picture take?
Well, hailing from Lancaster County, I had a ringside seat to the southeast and everything that went down. And clearly a huge messaging issue in the suburbs. That blue wave that Matt was talking about certainly was all around. And we saw some fairly decent Republicans kind of get caught up in that wave. Folks who had voted fairly well on some of our issues get caught. And so we saw that as a House member and quite a House members and quite a few Senate members went down to defeat in the Southeast. And it's a time for recalibration to analyze, of course, President Trump's impact down into the state, but also what messaging going forward needs to be emphasized. Ultimately, a positive pro-growth message needs to be recaptured.
Well, and I think that, you know, and listeners to the show have heard me say this before, you know, you persuade by explaining. And you actually connect with people and show them respect by explaining, because it makes it clear that you understand that, again, representative self-government is a consensual process. We need people to buy in that you're voting for a reason, and it should be for an idea. It should be for an actual specific agenda rather than just, you know, unloosed emotions.
You know, unfortunately, David, I think it was unloosed emotions in many regards, because when you just look at the straight party ticket votes, they were enormous. And in some of the areas where some of the polling we were doing showed some of these Republicans being able to survive that blue wave. Because when you went head to head, people had to pick. But so many people just went into the voting booth and pulled the trigger for one party. And I think that swept up a lot of people. It was a strong, particularly in the Southeast, anti-Trump, which turned into an anti-Republican vote that, as Gordon noted, washed up a lot of very good people who were voting in the interests of people in those regions. They voted for people they're going to want to raise their taxes. I mean, I think it's with their anger.
Yeah. Well, and certainly there's been a sorting out that's been going on for quite some time, where you have the wealthier area and the more populous area, a more densely populated area of Philadelphia and the four collar counties. Which in the collar counties had been ancestral Republican, but had voted in succession for Clinton and Gore and Kerry and Obama and now Hillary Clinton. But you also have areas of Pennsylvania that are where you have ancestral Democrats up in northeastern Pennsylvania and in the West, where those people. I mean, there was a time when Westmoreland County was the most heavily Democrat county in Pennsylvania, and that Montgomery County was the most Republican county. And now that those roles have been reversed, and if you look at the map, I saw it was an interesting map. So just you know, to benchmark it, obviously, as everybody who's listening to the sound of our voices already knows, that Governor Tom Wolf was reelected to a second term, that U.S. Senator Bob Casey was elected to another term, a 6-year term in the U.S. Senate, that with the Democrat gerrymander that was foisted upon us by the Democrat Supreme Court, that three seats changed party control, and so the
at the congressional level
yeah. And in the state Senate, that the Republicans lost 5, going from 34 to 29 in the 50-seat chamber, and that in the House, the House Republicans lost, I believe it was 11 seats,
correct,
which brings them to
110 to 93.
110 to 93 in the 203-seat chamber there. So that's where things actually stand. And yes, that the Republicans suffered terrible losses in southeastern Pennsylvania. At the same time, the map that I wanted to refer to, that it was it was Senator Casey and his election and the change in votes, that actually that in Appalachian Pennsylvania, that the vote intensified for the Republicans. And in fact, that you had some rural legislators, even though the state Democrats did spend time, energy, effort, money, and manpower to, you know, to get candidates on the ballot, and to support those candidates with party victory centers, that the Republicans in those rural areas actually won by even larger margins than they did before.
Clearly, there's some Trump effect going on out in those more rural areas, and we see some crossover. The old, you know, union blue-collar folks really gravitate that way. I really believe that the Democratic Party is in a search for its soul right now. In the urban Pittsburgh area, you have some old traditional steel worker union Democrats going down to defeat two socialists, and that was more in the primary phase, of course. But what is the Democratic Party of today and tomorrow? Is it a socialist, really Bernie Sanders, who's not even a Democrat, Bernie Sanders-style party? And what happens to those old, Johnson, Kennedy Johnson-style Democrats who, they may lean a little to the left on some things, but they like to go to work. They want to raise their families. They want to, salute the flag. They don't hate America. So where do they go, and what's the future there?
Well, the big elephant in the room, of course, in this is that the new lieutenant governor, it came from that cloth, someone who endorsed Bernie Sanders and certainly embraces much of the Democratic Socialist of America agenda.
And Senator Sanders actually made several trips to Pennsylvania to campaign for Lieutenant Governor-elect John Fetterman.
Yeah, and this will be very interesting. How does that shape the state party? Because obviously they did not gain control of the House or the Senate. And do they see that agenda as being the one that will possibly give them the opportunity to win in 2020? Because in 2020, everybody that pays attention to elections knows how important those are because of redistricting. Whoever controls the legislature has the upper hand in the redrawing of legislative and congressional maps.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Gordon Denlinger from NFIB Pennsylvania and Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners. And so, under the U.S. Constitution, that every 10 years that there's a census, and with the enumeration of the citizenry, then a representation in Congress is reallocated so that the U.S. House districts are proportionate by population. And then that is also the time when, because of population shifts within the Commonwealth, that the State House and State Senate lines are are redrawn.
You are seeing some pre-planning by National Democrats with the amount of money that came in from Eric Holder, who was the former Attorney General for Barack Obama.
He was held in contempt of Congress,
yeah,
by the way.
Well, he has put a focus on redistricting efforts. And I think when all is said and done, they may have pumped over $3 million into Pennsylvania races. They'll be back in 2020 because they see Pennsylvania as key, right? We're the fifth largest state. So the path to the White House for the Democrats comes through the Keystone State.
Yes.
So I think that we're going to likely see an additional effort.
What will this first term, with this next term of the General Assembly, be like? How will Governor Wolf's second term kick off?
Well, I think that that's the big question. Are we going to see the 2015 Tom Wolf, which was the ultra-liberal Tom Wolf that proposed $4.5 billion in tax increases, more than the other 49 states combined? Or do we see the campaign Tom Wolf that just came off the campaign trail proclaiming that essentially, Gordon, that he's like NFIB's best governor out there, small business governor? I mean, which governor are we going to see? Is it campaign Wolf or Governor Wolf from 2015?
He certainly did run as the small business governor. We saw the ads out there and we're like, aha, well, let's see if we can put some meat on the bones there and actually make something happen. Yeah, big question. I'd like to be optimistic on that point, and we'll certainly do the reach out. We all will to try to reach for the better aspects there. But the history hasn't been good, shall we say, and we have to acknowledge that reality. But the governor is freed from reelection constraints, so he doesn't have to play to, you know, his base, his groups quite as hard. And who knows? He may have a vision for a little more broad perspective.
If you have the concentration of the Democrats in the greater Philadelphia region and in the urban core of Pittsburgh, and that you have them becoming more of a far left party, as exemplified by the addition of these socialists in the Democrat caucus. Who's left to find the common ground? And I'm just very much afraid that the polarization is going to intensify.
Yeah, whatever happened to the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC, that was sort of the Clinton ride and the more centrist approach, which frankly worked pretty well for them in the 90s. And here we are today, they're veering further and further left. And I think at the end of the day, as I said earlier, I think they are in search of who they really are. And I think that's an opening for, conservative Republicans to actually message on issues that are important to average citizens.
Yeah. Well, and of course, for those of us who've been, in the conservative movement, that education reform has been one of our central causes. We recognize that when our schools are failing our kids by not giving them the kind of rigorous and challenging and meaningful educational experience that they need and deserve, that society, we're all poorer. Those individual kids will not be as successful in life, will not be as successful in the workplace as they could have been, should have been, and that all the rest of us are impoverished by that. That's sort of the first thing that comes to mind, even though, of course, Governor Wolf, having been strongly supported by the bureaucrat unions, that he's not responsive to that agenda. But I mean, it's someplace where, no matter who's in office, we must make progress.
Well, I think that that's where Republicans, if they, just putting this in the hard political terms, if they want to make a case to the public why they should remain in the majority or grow their majorities, they need to put forth a vision for Pennsylvania. What is it that Republicans stand for? And advance that agenda, irrespective of where Tom Wolf is. Make him sign or veto things, and the things that are good, things that help kids that are trapped in violent and failing schools in our urban centers, things that are trapping people in dependency in our welfare system, rather than giving them the opportunity to earn success and feel the joys of pursuing the American dream. I mean, these are the things that Republicans are going to have to demonstrate what they're for, not just what they're against when it comes to Tom Wolf. And they have had some success in the years past of making him ultimately sign things like pension reform, despite vetoing it in his first year. So my hope is that Republicans really demonstrate what they're for, and they advance things that will create more jobs, lower the barriers or the hurdles from, you know, I know Gordon, small businesses dealing with the regulatory environment, and challenge the governor. To, you know, he's railed on special interests. Well, look, the special interests absolutely came to his defense and funded his campaigns. Let's make him stand up for the children, for the poor in a true sense.
Well, and Gordon, actually, one of the other things that we didn't talk about is that with these new majorities in the House and Senate being brought in, that there's a new leadership team, and that Mike Terzai remains as the Speaker of the House, but that Brian Cutler from Lancaster County is the new House Majority Leader. Can you talk about Mr. Cutler?
And solid individual. Huge day for Brian as the new majority leader, and a true intellectual conservative in the true sense, not just given to, you know, soundbite conservatism. He actually possesses that in the core. So I think with him and hopefully a good staff team around him, he's going to be in position to advance an agenda. And going to Matt's point, you know, we need to identify our big three or four issues. We need to learn how to articulate them clearly. And make the case with the public that we have a better, brighter vision that's going to help families and individuals succeed.
Well, and it's, you know, and again, we will look, I mean, if, to the extent that the Republicans are concerned about governing, they should look back with great regret at, you know, at the recent past. And especially, I mean, they, in the Senate, there were 34 members. They had a veto override supermajority with which they did really not too terribly much. And so, you know, having gotten a good solid thrashing in the last election, you know, if only they had used the power that they had at the time to stand for something recognizable, that perhaps they would have fared better. But, you know, tomorrow is another day, and that they will be, you know, that all of these elected officials will have the chance to, you know, to make a stand and prove their worth.
Well, you know, David, I think another story that just real quick is that, look, Republicans that decide to vote for the trial bar or the unions, they'll wrench you until they can own a Democrat. And I think that that's part of the story and the agenda is like, look, doing favors for the people who are not on your team will not pay off in the end.
Yes.
They will come and take you out when they have that opportunity.
Do not help the cannibal in the hopes of being eaten last. Goodness.
Indeed.
Well, that's all the time that we have for this program. But again, a hearty welcome aboard to our pal Gordon Denlinger. Gordon, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Sure. We're out on the web at nfib.org. Come check us out and join our 12,500 members all across PA, mom and pop shops all across the state.
Outstanding. Matt, where can people track you down?
Yeah, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. So from Gordon and Matt and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. On the surface, it would appear the power dynamic in Pennsylvania state government changed little as a result of last week's general election. Governor Tom Wolf was reelected, and Republicans retained solid control of both the state House and the state Senate. Back from where we started? Not quite. The 2018 election cycle saw the continuation of two trends: the drift of Democrats into the arms of the socialist left, and a Republican power shift from the Philadelphia suburbs to the more conservative central and western parts of the state. Governor Tom Wolf has often, and for good reason, been labeled the most liberal governor in America. To the degree that lieutenant governors actually matter, the state's new second banana will push him even further in that direction. Lieutenant Governor-elect John Fetterman is a Bernie Sanders-style socialist. He replaces the hapless Mike Stack, a Philadelphia poll more interested in the power dynamics of politics than ideology. Wolf tilted to the far left to win his first primary 4 years ago and clearly felt at home. He went on to propose tax hikes that exceeded those offered by governors in all 49 other states combined, and has remained a staunch advocate for left-wing policies ever since. Fetterman and the avowed socialist who upended traditional Democrats in the primary to claim seats in the General Assembly are certain to fortify his position. As liberal policies made the city more and more unlivable, Philadelphia Democrats fled to the suburbs. There they have continued voting into office candidates who espouse the very same policies that destroyed the city. As a result, the four counties surrounding Philadelphia, which had for decades been the epicenter of Republican power in the state, have trended Democrat. If there was a blue wave this election year, it crashed ashore in those counties. The numbers could change a bit as the official count progresses, but Republicans lost 13 state House seats and 4 state Senate seats in that region. It is rare for more than 3 or 4 incumbents to lose statewide in a given election cycle, so the GOP wipeout in southeastern Pennsylvania can rightly be described as a tidal wave. Continuing the westward shift of the statewide GOP, Republicans partially offset their losses in the southeast by flipping 3 Democrat seats, 1 in Bucks County and 2 elsewhere in the state. Republicans held historically high majorities in both state legislative chambers. Thus, the losses left them in solid control, but with margins closer to the historical average. What the election did do was to shift the ideological center of both the House and Senate Republican caucuses away from southeastern liberalism into the mainstream conservatism that is popular in the balance of the state. While legislative Democrats voted in lockstep with their leadership, Republican legislative leaders had the more difficult task of moving conservative policies advocated by their caucus majority while trying to appease their southeastern members. The goal was to hold on to those southeastern seats. It didn't work. The end result is, absent the need to protect its members from suburban Philadelphia because, well, they're no longer there, legislative Republicans are now free to stand firmly against the socialist policies Governor Tom Wolf and the Democrats are sure to pursue. This means Pennsylvania's divided state government has become even more divided. The first battle will come in a matter of weeks when Governor Tom Wolf proposes his next state budget. It is sure to be chock full of tax hikes and new spending. Republicans effectively blocked the more radical elements of his agenda during the governor's first term. A more conservative majority should be able to do so in the years ahead. Thus have voters across Penn's Woods put into effect all the elements needed for epic policy and budget battles, which are likely to end in gridlock. Given the fact that most legislation that actually passes expands the dependency state at the expense of taxpayers, gridlock may be the best outcome. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WDAD-AM and WQMU-FM in Indiana, along with WJSA-FM in Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.